Wendy, are you ready? Like to welcome everyone out to the City Council regular session of September 17th, 2024. I'm Mayor Horrocks. Welcome, everyone. Our first item is a thought and the Pledge of Allegiance from Councilmember Lisa Baskin.
Got to get a little bit higher. Okay. Welcome to the City Council meeting. We have a lot of young people in the audience, especially happy to see you. In the last meeting, we had a lot of discussion about the homeless situation and how serious of a problem it is. And it was recommended to me to read a book. This book's called The Glass Castle. I don't know if any of you have read it. But I'm going to read a passage of it that really touched me. It's only a three paragraphs. But I would like you to listen to this, because this is the way it must be for so many young people. It was around this time that Dad lost his job. He said there was nothing to worry about because Phoenix was so big and growing so fast that he could find another job at a site where they hadn't spread lies about him. Then he got fired from his second job and from his third, and was kicked out of the electricians' union and started doing odd jobs and day work. Whatever money Mom had inherited from Grandma Smith had disappeared, and once again, we started scraping by. I didn't go hungry. Hot lunch at school cost a quarter, and we could usually afford that. When we couldn't, and I told Mrs. Ellis, my fourth grade teacher, that I had forgotten my quarter, she said her records indicated that someone had already paid for me, even though it seemed awfully coincidental. I didn't want to push my luck by asking too many questions about who this someone was. I ate the hot lunch. Sometimes that lunch was all I had to eat all day, but I could get by just fine on one meal. One afternoon, when Brian, that's her brother, and I had come home to an empty fridge, we went out to the alley behind the house looking for bottles to redeem. Down the alley was the delivery boy of a warehouse. A big green dumpster stood in the parking lot. When no one was looking, Brian and I pushed open the lid, climbed up, and dived inside to search for bottles. I was afraid it might be full of yucky garbage. Instead, we found an astonishing treasure: cardboard boxes filled with loose chocolates. Some of them were whitish and dried out looking, and some were covered with a mysterious green mold, but most of them were fine. We pigged out on chocolates, and from then on, whenever Mom was too busy to make dinner or we were out of food, we'd go back to the dumpster to see if any new chocolate was waiting for us. From time to time, it was. Okay, please join me and we'll recite the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Lisa. Next item is citizen comment. If there's anyone here to address the council, please come forward, state your name and address.
We're good. Go. Hello, my name is Sandy McCleave. I am a resident in the Foxborough community, and my background's in real estate. I've been a real estate developer and broker for the past 10 years. I've developed apartment buildings. I've done multifamily, different types of multifamily. I've done retail. I've done land sales, land transactions, a bunch of different things. And I recently, 2 weeks ago, was here for the meeting and everything. Shortly after, tried to speak with city staff about the land use and different things. And said I had some good information, all these different things, and quickly was just dismissed. It was like, who the heck are you? I don't even care. And it was very frustrating. I've dealt with many cities. Most always, I can get a meeting with the Maynard planner, city manager, some key people, and they didn't even care. They didn't care that I was a developer. I told them I was a resident here. They didn't care. They didn't like my short little idea quickly. I had some other questions for them. Quickly dismissed. So very disappointed from that standpoint. Hopefully, things on the staff level change. Okay. Second, getting to it. Let me go with my notes real quick here. So now I'm here to tell you kind of my standpoint because couldn't talk in closed doors, so now we're in a public meeting. Okay. We cannot sit idle on this land. Okay. The contract is over. I'll disclose, I've submitted a contract on that property as well as a couple other people. So I feel like I kind of know some of the ins and outs of it. The city is very much kind of sitting on their hands about this, and we'll have a problem. If we sit idly, we will have a problem. I have seen how the state works. I was involved in the prison relocation, and I saw all the backdoor deals that happened. I saw all the Houdini, don't look this way. We'll sneak in here. We'll get this wrapped under contract. Nobody will know about it. It's a bad deal. And if you think that Davis County is going to do something to fix their problem, they will not. None of those mayors want it in their city that are on that board. They will do nothing for a year. So what happens after a year? It goes to the state. And the state has said that that meets the criteria and it checks the box. Right? We heard that them say that last week. That's a problem. We need to be proactive. We have 12 months to get something done on that property to ensure that we don't have a homeless shelter in our city, okay? So let's not sit idly on this, okay? I'm curious to know what is the city's plan with that property? What was their pipe dream of their intended use on that property? If they had a desire to put something there, what would it be? You know, I know that you guys are trying to change the conditional use permit, the land use to try to block it. Guess what? If you arbitrarily try to do something like that, the state can then sue you and you will lose because they'll know you are just trying to block the land use to stop the homeless shelter. You literally have to be proactive in putting something else there. Okay? I, as well as I know of three other people, went to the city with a proposal of a multifamily, and quickly we were shot down. And I'm saying, why? Why wasn't there a discussion? Why not be open-minded about it? Why quickly shut it down? What does multifamily do to our city? It helps our city grow. As you know probably better than everybody, we're kind of already landlocked. We're already fully built out. How can we grow as a city? How can we get more residents? We got to go vertical. Right? That certain land costs, that's your only option. I hear people in Foxborough say all the time, I want more retail. I want a restaurant. I want this. I do too. Guess how we get that? We have more residents. We have more rooftops. We have more demand for retail. We have more demand for restaurants. Very simple. Okay? And I know from an economic standpoint, like if you're buying the land at that cost, what's the only use you can really do on it? Multifamily. So I'm curious to see what's the city's take on it. And instead of shutting it down completely, maybe residents will like it. If the alternative is a homeless shelter or a new rehab facility or multifamily, I know my neighbors. I think they might be okay with multifamily, where otherwise it wouldn't get pushed through. And I completely understand that. And so let's be open-minded. Let's be proactive. Let's not sit on our hands. Otherwise, we're going to have a problem in 12 months.
Thank you.
All right, I guess it's me. My name is Sarah Sorensen. I live at 413 East 100 North. I know some of you probably know me. I know Tammy knows me. I have been in front of the city 2 to 3 times in the last 5 years requesting a speed zone by Orchard Elementary. In November of 2022, my dear friend's 10-year-old girl was hit and killed walking from school at Bonneville. I think all of you know that a little girl was hit walking to Orchard maybe 10 or 12 days ago. She is critically injured. The city continually is adding housing in this area. I think what you all settled on is 100 units across the street from Orchard. And that's against the residents' wishes. I don't know if you all are familiar with Adelaide Elementary, just two blocks away. They have 5 speed zones. 5. You can't go anywhere during school time and get there quickly by Adelaide. Yet people will pass Adelaide on Orchard, and they'll pass it on 89 and speed up. I understand that the person that hit that girl was going 35 miles an hour. You've created this nightmare up 130 East. You know you have. There's tons of kids that walk down there, and they would have to walk either to get to a crossing guard. They have to walk in an area that has no sidewalks. No sidewalks. Little kids. So I guess I would want to know where they should cross, why the city doesn't have one speed zone for these little kiddos. The only thing I can come up with is that you're willfully and recklessly deciding not to. You've known it's a problem, and we're talking about money for investigating a bike path or spooktacular. Please, please, I beg of you, put in a speed zone and consider the danger to the 600 kids that go to that school. I think I would bet the 200 or 300 of them walk. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you want to address that? Sure. There are speed zones. Craig, maybe you want to address this. Orchard Elementary has speed zones and crossing guards.
A flashing light speed zone.
Do you want to address this question? I would say with regard to the recent tragic accident, we are looking at Center Street. And what we can do there on Center Street that would safely stop traffic so the kids can cross.
Isn't a sidewalk on the agenda there, too? It's like our next project, so, yeah.
But anyway, Craig, do you want to maybe address
school zone crossings are determined by the school district in compliance with what engineering knows are our municipal standards. That's where we are allowed to set up school crossings down to 20 miles an hour. Center Street is already a 25 mile an hour zone. Speed was not a factor. I don't know where that number is coming from, but we've done the calculations on that accident and that was not a factor. But I also understand how speculations can be turned into fact. We do have a pretty good idea of what was going on at that time, and we are screening appropriate traffic charges to the driver, but speed is not one of them. I think this, what's interesting with school zones is the city is responsible to staff them once they have been established by the school district safe routes program that they submit to us. One of the 5 that you're talking about with Adelaide is actually a split between both Orchard and Adelaide up on Orchard Drive. We have kids from both of those schools that travel through that we staff with crossing guards. We do have a crossing guard at the safe route established by the school district at Orchard and Center Street. And we have tried to make sure that we keep crossing guards at that area that can handle that intersection. We conduct heavy speed enforcement in our traffic school zones, especially on the roads where there's higher speeds like Highway 89. There are, I don't disagree that there are schools that have more established school zones with the flashing 20 mile an hour lights and the school crossing guards, but there's other schools, for example, Foxborough Elementary does not have any designated school zones, and that's because of the way those roads are constructed with intersections and other things like that. So if it was solely up to the city where we could put crossing guards, I think we would be in a little bit better position to say we're doing this. I assure you, we care about that. That's why we have such heavy speed enforcement on Center Street, especially east of Highway 89. We write as many speeding violations and tickets there. I think that most residents that travel that street regularly know that our speed trailer that both display speed as well as those that don't set display speed is, that's probably one of our more frequent areas we control speed. But it is a tragic and a sad situation, and it's one of the reasons I would never be in favor of seeing that street as busy it is raise its speed limit above that 25 mile an hour residential standard.
Can I ask a question? Who is the local highway authority? Does anyone know? Is that the municipality?
It's probably the city of North Salt Lake.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
So as I read the state statute, it says that the local highway authority are the ones who shall establish speed zones. So you know, the principal is under that idea as well.
Okay, thank you. Thank you both of you for your comments. Next item is the introductions. Oh. D. Lalas.
I have two things. But first of all, since Mayor Pro Tem last week or 2 weeks ago said that I needed to speak up, I'm speaking up tonight. Just to let you know. No, she made a remark. But two things. Number one is that we just got our newsletter today, and there's a whole page on it about Spooktacular that should answer all the questions that I heard earlier. Second of all, my wife read me a text or a Facebook post that she got, I think it was yesterday, someone complaining about waiting 45 minutes for trains that did not come. And 2 weeks ago or so, I sat out on the west side of the railroad tracks out here with the bar down and the lights flashing for about 20 minutes, and I decided that I would go around. So I went down Fourth West, clear over to the 1100 and back around to my house. And I don't know if that bar ever came up while I was there. But I've heard a lot of people recently saying that the bar comes down and never goes back up. And when I was there, there was no train that came either way. I saw the bar go down. There were no trains coming. We waited and waited, and the bar did not go back up. Now, for the last several years, we have spent millions of dollars studying to see what we can do to get over those railroad tracks and sort of get rid of that problem. The big problem is that UPS, or UP Railroad, says, no, you can't cross our land. That's ours. We're God's, and we're going to keep it that way, and we're not going to allow you to do this and that and everything else. I think that we ought to see if there's something that we can do, whether it's go out there and pretend that we are in the Civil War and tear up railroad tracks or whatever it takes. But I think that it's time for the railroad people to take some responsibility, I guess is the best terminology, to make sure that their lights are working. It doesn't bother me if I come up there, the bar goes down, train goes by, even though it may be going slow and 100 cars, at least it's moving. But when that bar comes down and it sits there for 25, 30, 40 minutes, and there are no trains either way, they've got a problem, and I think they ought to be aware of it, and whether we can get somebody there, maybe a police officer can go over there with a sledgehammer and pound on the tracks or something to tell it that there's no train there. But I would like to propose to the city council that we do something that resolves the lack of responsibility by the railroad people on taking care of our needs, which we've been complaining about for several years, and they keep saying, no, you're not going to do this and you're not going to do that because we're sacred. Thank you.
Thank you, Dee. That reminds me, we're probably due for an update at some point from Horrocks Engineering, aren't we, on that?
They're not working on any proposals for us. Yeah, we need to have we need to have a discussion as a council where we are. And we're not working on any plans or anything right now.
Okay.
That is bridge plans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Ken, you have been in contact with the railroads quite recently, is that correct?
Yes.
On working on communication, like Dee was addressing?
You mean on the idea of having
apps
and stuff?
Signage.
Yes. Yeah, we have. We haven't done much on that. I'm not going to represent we're ready to roll out an app because we're not.
We've all been there. Yeah.
And I would clarify, we have not spent millions of dollars. Our city has not spent millions of dollars studying this. So somebody may have, but it's not us.
Anyone else have a comment? Okay, we'll move on. Next item is introduction and swearing in of the 2024-2025 North Salt Lake Youth City Council leadership. I'm going to turn this over to Tammy.
Okay, I will turn the time over to Enos and Audrey Beebe, who will announce the 2024-2025 North Salt Lake City Council leadership. And I also, just as they're walking up here, today the Youth Council went around and asked people to display signs, and I was proud to be their representative on the City Council. They do good work, and they are dependable and good kids. So thanks for what you do. You do a lot of work, and a lot of time goes into what you're doing.
It was a good night with them. They did a great job out there working with the One Kind Act. So it was a lot of fun to see them out in the community with them. We'll just jump straight into it. We are missing a couple of members, but I will announce the members that are here first, and we'll have them come up and just join us here. Probably coming right up in front of me here. So this year, as our mayor, we have Krish Thoda. As our city manager, we have Aurora Beebe. And as our recorder, we have Ainsley Reese. For our different committee chairs, we have our activities committee chair is Allie Abel. We'll have her come up. Our leadership committee chair is Rachel Allen. And then our two that are not here are also committee chairs tonight. That is our publicity committee chair, that's Andrew Corrado, and our service committee chair, that is Marin Otis. So we'll have to have them sworn in another night. But these are our representatives for our executive committee that we present to you guys this night.
Okay, I'm going to come down and do the swearing in, and then when we're done, we'll take a photo or two, and then your certificates are right along there where you can sign them and take them.
While he's coming down, if you guys all find your certificate and sign the one that's there for you, then Lindsay can start to use the other ones.
I solemnly swear
that I will support,
obey and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And the
and the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office.
With fidelity.
With fidelity.
Consider yourself sworn in.
Get a picture with you guys in here too. Anybody?
Hold on.
I took your spot.
There we go.
Great.
Thanks.
Okay, let's get mom and dad's. You know, as I was reading that oath, I was reminded that today is Constitution Day, and so it's the annual time to remember that our rights were not provided by the Constitution. The Constitution's purpose is to limit the government from taking rights that are ours, and I think people have that backwards a lot of times, but... Okay, let's move on. Next item is the public hearing and then consideration of a resolution 2024-32R, a resolution adopting amendments to the fiscal year budgets. Heidi?
Thank you, Mayor. So this budget amendment accomplishes a few things. First, it increases projected revenues and records those coming in from various sources, such as grants, insurance, claims, new revenues from the driving range based on the proposed infrastructure that's going to be put in, and reimbursements related to those improvements. Increases in operating expenditures in the general fund and the golf fund. Increases in capital expenditures for the Gary Way emergency repairs, which we haven't recognized in the budget yet. An extension of Nancy Way, which Karen had kind of shown in her presentation. And exchanging some projects, Elk Hollow for Woodcrest. That was discussed at the very closing of the budget process and didn't make it in time for the final budget approval, but that was presented at the June 16th City Council meeting, I believe, or June 18th City Council meeting. A decrease in capital expenditures of that Elk Hollow project, reallocating that funding. Decrease for the Woodcrest project, reallocating the funding to Elk Hollow. And then a rescheduling of the North Park Village water line. And to summarize what is happening up here, the first two line items are recognition of a grant that was received, as well as the related expenditures. That's $14,036 in revenue, $14,036 in expenditure. The next two line items are recognition of some vehicle damage. We had an insurance claim on one of our public safety vehicles, so recognizing the insurance proceeds as well as the expenditure for those repairs. The net of those two items is $500. That's our deductible. The next item is $17,100 increase to the advertising and public notices budget. This is to print and mail newsletters to the residents. Right now we have an e-newsletter, but there's a proposal to three times a year send an actual newsletter. We did this the end of last fiscal year. Total cost was about $5,800 to do that after printing and postage. And then the last two items are related to tuition reimbursement. So we began a tuition reimbursement program last fiscal year. and are renewed it this current fiscal year 2025, with the assumption that as the funds were awarded, they would be moved to the appropriate department budgets. And so this is representing the move of some of those funds. The first part is going into public safety for one of our employees who is pursuing a criminal justice degree. The second part you'll see in our storm drain fund, $2,000 funded for an employee who is pursuing a master's in public administration. In the streets fund, you'll see the net impact of those project swaps. So Elk Hollow, the streets portion, budget increase of $430,580. With Woodcrest coming off of $205,580, and then $60,000 in Nancy Way, which is related to some additional paving tied to the Gary Way incident. In Fund 51 Water, $135,000 project cost for the water repairs for that leak. $60,000 in Lacey Way water line replacement is an extension onto Nancy Way. The North Park Village water line is being proposed to schedule and push out to a future budget year. And then again, you'll see the Elk Hollow project coming in at $735,000 to be partially offset by that Woodcrest project and then delaying the North Park project. In Fund 53, there's the $2,000 related to the tuition reimbursement being pulled out of the general fund and allocated to the storm drain fund. And then last, in the golf fund, driving range revenues increase of $25,000. That's partially offset by the contract for TrackMan range service, which will be on a future agenda. That's for some of the improvements that are being proposed in extending the offerings that the golf course has. And then the $135,000 revenue and expense is related to improvements for the sledding through Gateway Parks. They will be paying those improvements, but we need to recognize that the city will pay them up front and be reimbursed by that organization. So total end expenditures or use of fund balance for this budget amendment is $524,600, the majority of it going for capital projects. Were there any questions?
I have one. Thank you, Heidi. This wasn't my original question, but just so I understand, on the police $2,000 reimbursement, since it's a line item of a negative in two different sections, is it in essence coming off twice?
Is this for the tuition reimbursement?
Yeah, just so I understand
that. It's coming out of the budget for admin. So there's $10,000 budgeted in just general administrative support. We don't have any wages or salaries running through that budget. It's just kind of a non-departmental admin budget. So we're reducing that budget by $4,000, giving $2,000 of it to the public safety department, and then giving $2,000 of it to the storm drain department.
I see. So the parentheses of the $4,000 is what
and
offsets
that. And so because we don't know which employees may be eligible or be submitting for that benefit,
you have an earmark.
We don't pre-budget for it except just to put a lump sum amount on a first-come, first-served basis.
And then my actual question was, I've received a newsletter in my bill periodically, but it looks like there wasn't anything currently budgeted for that. Was that not in our previous budget, even though we've been doing it?
We discontinued mailing them out with every utility bill some time ago.
Uh-huh.
But we're looking at doing a direct mailing. We do still have quite a few residents who only get e-billing and e-notices.
Uh-huh.
And so this would be an independent mailing outside the utility billing process.
So
but other
be
than
bundled.
That, we have been just doing the e-newsletters for the last probably 3 years at least. So we just did the one-off at the end of last year to kind of test it out and to get some information out there. And I think with all of the construction projects and information we're trying to put out there, especially with the holiday events that the city is hosting and sponsoring, it's nice to be able to get that out there and print to folks. But it is costly.
So it's the postage printing paper. Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? Thank you, Heidi.
Thank you.
I'll now open it up, the public hearing. If there's anyone here to address this item, please come forward. Seeing none, I will close the public hearing and entertain a motion.
I'll move that the City Council approve Resolution 2024-32R, a resolution adopting amendments to the 2024-2025 fiscal year budgets.
I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That resolution passes. Next item is consideration of Resolution 2024-31R, a resolution approving the agreement between the city and Reagan Outdoor Advertising. Sherry?
Thank you. So I would just like to give you a little bit of background information. So the state code has a provision in 109A513(2) that a billboard company may request to relocate any billboard for no reason, as long as it is within the same city limits and it is in an industrial and a manufacturer zone. So they have several sections of it. The first section talks about if it's been put in the wrong place. The other sections, some of them talk about if it's being obstructed from view, but there is a subsection that as long as it's within a mile and it's within a commercial or industrial or manufacturing zone, that we cannot deny them to move that. So, that being said, in 2022, we were approached by Reagan Outdoor. So I have given you a map here of all of our existing billboards. We have the two that you see there that are marked 209 West Center and 205 West Center. So they're the green circles with the red circle around them. So in 2022, Reagan made a proposal to move those two signs to the two red locations that you see there. One is the 745 Overland site, also known as TW Holdings, and the other is the 5 North Main, I can't see it, but it's also known as Aspen Heights. When they made application for that, the staff initially denied the applications because they were outside the 1 mile range. The way that they had asked for them, both of the signs were outside 1 mile, and they also violated our standard of 1,500 feet separation between billboards in our S3 sign overlay zone. Reagan appealed that, and we went before the hearing officer. As part of that hearing, we were represented by our city attorney, Todd, and we came to the conclusion that one of the signs, the 209 West Center and the Aspen Heights sign location, was under the 1 mile radius. The other sign was clearly at TW Holdings outside of 1 mile for both of the two signs that they wanted to relocate. And just incidentally, they wanted to relocate these because I-15 is going to be rebuilt and the off-ramp is going to take out some of those storage units and require those signs to be moved. We also felt it wasn't ripe, that wasn't the time. It was not imminent that the signs needed to be moved. UDOT hasn't asked them to move the signs, but the statute doesn't say that they have to be asked or they have to be told. It just says they can ask and that we're supposed to grant it. So coming out of that hearing, we came out with a settlement that they would not request the TW Holdings site, and they would only request one of the two signs to be relocated to the Aspen Heights site. They applied for a building permit that hasn't been executed as far as they haven't built anything yet. Okay, fast forward to 2023. There are two signs that were on the Big West Oil along I-215, and they're marked with the green circles with the yellow circle around them. They submitted a request to move one of those to the DATS trucking site on Redwood Road and one of them onto Highway 89 right across the street here at Truck Trim. We were obviously very concerned about those two locations, and especially the one in our town center. So I began contacting Reagan, and we began negotiating on alternative locations that we would find favorable, and expressed to Reagan why we didn't want signs in our billboard signs in our town center. So what you have before you tonight is an agreement with Reagan. What the terms that they have come to agree to are that they would not move the two sites that are on the Storage City sites, so the 209 or 205 West Center, that those would stay in place. My suggestions on those two were that at the time that UDOT widens that, that those signs could actually be relocated on those very same properties just farther away from the right-of-way, or possibly they could be relocated maybe somewhere south of the city or at the south end of the city in the Lakeview Rock Products site. So they went back and they tried to see if they could negotiate leases with Lakeview Rock Products. They haven't been able to be successful at that, but they came back and said, what if we leave those signs there, and then at some future date when we need to move them, we can negotiate where those two signs would be, and then move these two Big West oil signs to the TW Holdings site and the Aspen Heights site. And I said, and I would like in that agreement that you agree to never locate a billboard sign in our town center. So that is the terms of this proposed agreement, that Reagan agrees that they will not attempt to move any sign that they own or manage or now or in the future into our town center, that we will agree to allow them to move the Big West oil signs to those two red locations, the TW Holdings and the Aspen Heights site. And then in the future, we will negotiate in good faith with them on the relocation of the Storage City signs. But they will not put any signs or ask any signs be put in the town center, which is identified on this map in blue. So let me just go through the terms that are in the agreement. So again, they're agreeing to withdraw all four of the signs that they previously asked relocations for. We would agree to the relocation of the Big West billboards to the Aspen Heights and TW Holdings. The relocated signs will not exceed the maximum sign face of 672 square feet and the maximum height allowed under the state code, which is either 65 feet above ground or 25 feet above the grade of the freeway, whichever is higher. That the relocated signs could be converted to digital billboards, that the two storage signs would not be relocated until the freeway was expanded, and that at that time we would negotiate in good faith for locations and any code or zoning changes that would be required for that in exchange for them not, and then number six, that they would not relocate any signs now or in the future into our town center. And so that is the agreement that I have negotiated, and I would love to.
Any questions?
Real quick, do we have any codes or zoning stipulations that already would not allow them to be in our town center?
No, and the state code says it could be in any location that's within a mile, as long as it's zoned commercially, industrially, or manufacturing. And our highway commercial zone in the town center would qualify as a commercial zone. And so that's the problem for us. We have Guy Larson with Reagan Outdoor Advertising. He is on a Zoom call if you have any questions for him or if he has any comments.
Thank you for this work. Sorry.
I just had one other question on that previous legal situation. Am I correct in thinking that they were told that they could not put those two signs when you went to arbitration in those two locations originally, or one of those signs?
Because it was outside of the mile.
The 1,000.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, Elisa.
Thank you. Thank you for this work. Thank you for negotiating on our behalf. I wonder if part of the negotiation was also preventing additional relocation to that Foxborough location. What was the conversation around that?
We didn't have as much conversation of that, other than I was trying to find them alternative locations that I felt would be beneficial to them and beneficial to the city. And that's why I looked at the two sites that you see there in pink. There is plenty of room along I-15 at Lakeview Rock Products that even meet our standards of the 1,500 feet separation distance. The only difference is Lakeview Rock Products, while being in industrial use, is actually zoned residential. And so if they were to relocate them, then we would have to do some sort of a rezoning of the property. It was rezoned residential 40 years ago. And I think so that when it converts from their non-conforming grandfathered use, it will be, it can be converted into a residential use. That's a kind of a holding zone for the gravel pits.
Can I ask a question then, probably to Mr. Larson directly? This Redwood Road location is next to a residential area, similar to what it would look like in our town center, not exactly the same. Would you be open to also prohibiting the movement here on Redwood Road, given that there are these proposed alternative locations available up on I-15?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so I appreciate, my name's Guy Larson. I represent Reagan Outdoor Advertising. And I first want to tell Sherry, it's hard to believe this has been over 2 years. That blew my mind when you said that. Seems like just yesterday. But I appreciate all the work she's done and staff. And we've been negotiating now for quite some time. But so to answer your question, first I want to address the question about the pink. What's the gravel pit? What's the name of that lake?
Lakeview Rock Products.
Yeah, Lakeview. So we reached out to them as far as moving signs there, and at this time they were reluctant to lease to us because they don't know what the future holds for their property. But that still may be a possibility if we ever need to relocate another sign due to the I-15 project. So, but at this time they were reluctant to do anything because they didn't know what the future holds for them. Now, to answer your question, as far as, can somebody point to me where, I'm looking at the map, can somebody point to me where that location is, Sherry, where the DATS or the one on Redwood Road is, and where the residential?
It's that bottom one in the yellow. She's circling it, if you can see that with her mouse. So it's the yellow X and the yellow box. That was where one of the two Big West signs that you'd originally requested.
And the residential is where from that X?
Further north, so right there. Where?
It's also west of that.
Yeah, west and north.
Do you know how approximately how far away that is from the residential zone or the residence there? Is it
3/4 of a mile, maybe?
3/4. At this time, I don't know the answer to that question. We certainly like to keep our signs on highly traveled roads. Our first preference would be I-15 or the 215 there. So to answer your question, you know, possibly. But like I said, we've pretty much limited where in the town center where signs can go. And as far as spacing from another billboard or whatever, I don't foresee us doing that. I don't want to say yes, that we would agree to not put anything there, but our druthers would be to put it on the I-15 instead. So
thank you. I appreciate that. And actually, as I'm looking closer at this map, as I was looking at it, I thought this I-215 was Center Street. So I was shifting over where I was considering this as well. I'd like for that to be part of the conversation as it comes up for negotiations in the future. But I think for now that addresses my concern. Thank you.
Thank you.
So yep. Can I just say one other thing real fast? So Sherry and I have worked together, and we really appreciate the relationship we have with North Salt Lake, and we certainly don't want to strain that relationship. And in saying that, Sherry and I have worked together, and I envision the same process if we ever have to move another sign that we will work with Sherry. She's been great to work with. So that shouldn't be a problem in negotiating another site if we ever have to move one. So
And then if I could just clarify, Sherry, as these negotiations move forward, where my concern is actually north of Center Street, and that in our city development, I believe that that Redwood Road area is and can be viewed as a second city center style, that we've got these kind of bimodal locations in the city, especially right around Lee's. And so my concern is north of Center Street, not necessarily south of Center Street.
And I could do an analysis of all the existing billboards and show you how far away a mile is from the Redwood Road and Foxborough area for a future meeting. I'd be happy to, or just email that out to the council so you can see what the boundaries are. Because once these two big West Oil ones are removed, I think that takes the DATS site off the table anyway, at least for those. And the billboards that are on the blue that are on the south side of I-215, those are not within the city. Those are in unincorporated county. So they're not in the same municipality, so they would not be eligible under the statute to be moved from the county into the city.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Larson, for those answers, and thank you, Sherry, for this work.
Here.
Any other questions, comments? Thank you, Sherry. I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council approve Resolution 2024-31R, approving an agreement with Reagan Outdoor Advertising for the relocation of billboards within the City of North Salt Lake in accordance with the Utah State Code 10-98-513, with the following findings as written in the staff report.
I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion, comment?
I'll do a quick thank you to Sherry and also to Reagan Outdoor Advertising for their working with us.
I'm going to make an amendment to the motion. You mentioned 10-9A, 503. It's 513. So it just needs to be corrected.
Okay. 513. Thank you.
And Tammy's second stands with that correction?
Yes, and mine.
All right. Well, let's start with, Suzette. We're starting with Tammy.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Thank you, Sherry. Next item is consideration of Ordinance 2024-05. An ordinance amending Title 3, Chapter 2, referring to alcoholic beverages.
Right. So we have under Title 3, Chapter 3, in our alcoholic beverages, we have a provision right now only for beer-only licenses in restaurants, at the golf course, and in bowling alleys. We also have some outdated language, and so we requested from our city attorney some draft language that he had written for another city, but that would be applied to any city as far as updating our regulations. And so what this ordinance does is updates our regulations with respect to the control of alcoholic beverages in the city. So one thing I do want to just say as a caveat to the very beginning of this, we're adding a lot of definitions and a lot of other different types of licenses. That doesn't mean that tomorrow somebody can come in and apply for all those licenses, because there's one more step. We have to actually go into our land use table, which is what the Planning Commission is working on with. We talked about that earlier in the work session, that they're currently working on the conditional uses and the land use tables. We're having work sessions every meeting to go through that and get that back to the City Council for your adoption. So they would have to make recommendations for specific zones that allowed a tavern, or that allowed a brewery, or that allowed a banquet facility. And so right now those aren't allowed land uses, but these are alcohol licenses that are issued by the state. It also modernizes the language as far as the alcohol content of beer, because we had some outdated language, and also some outdated language for distances from community locations, and we just made it conform to what city council, or what the state code is, and what the state, how the State Department of Alcoholic Beverage Services are administering the law. So the proposed changes, it adopts, number one, the formal adoption of the State Alcoholic Beverages Control Act, adds the new definitions, the license types, again, updating to state regulations, updates license types to those that are allowed by the state, specific regulations for those license types. So if people want, if somebody want to do a brewery or a bar or a reception center or a first full service restaurant, it has the standards by which those could be approved. It also updates the process for and specifies the things that need to be included in the application, the requirements that need to be met, and for administrative staff review. And so that was a change. As you know, we've come before you several times over the years for restaurants that wanted to have a beer license. And the question was always like, couldn't this be handled administratively by staff? And so we have put that in. As far as the way it will be approved, it would be reviewed by the police chief, the health department, the fire district, the building official, and community development director. So if for some reason it couldn't pass any of the requirements by those five departments, that would be denied. It specifies that they're also required to have their state licensing and specifies how we grant local consent. It has the qualifications for the licensing, the bonding that's required, the fees that are required, and this, and how a license might be transferred if someone owned a restaurant that had a liquor license, how that license would be transferred to the new owner and what that new owner would have to do in order to make that license transfer valid. It provides procedures for the revocation or forfeiture of licenses, and then that has the location and operation requirements. It also updates the penalties, both criminal and civil, under our current statute. And as I explained earlier, so the things that would have to come next would be some code amendments to the land use table, to where these uses might be allowed or where they might be prohibited. And then we will need some comprehensive fee schedule updates, because it calls for fees for these various types of licenses, which we don't have in our current fee standard. But because we also don't have these land uses in our land use table yet, we don't quite need those yet. So we figured we'll see how you like this ordinance. If you pass it, then we will bring back up some recommendations for fees, and then also fees for transfers of licensees and fees for the civil fines for violations of the ordinance. Do you have any questions about the ordinance?
No, but I have a little bit of history on this. Just this June, I believe, the state auditor did an audit of DABS, which was 2024, and they found that the state portion of it was not systematic enough in the revocation and reinstatement of these licenses. What's good about this ordinance is that we say we consent, but we also understand that we will be, it's effective and not effective until the state has approved and gone through the process. But that now state process will be approved. And I'm kind of, this is humorous to me, I've recently been hired to be the hearing officer for DABS, for cases on licensure, and I don't know if I need to recuse myself on this or not. I think I will, because I get paid for being the hearing officer, so I'm just going to recuse myself on this one.
Fair enough.
I have a quick question. Going back one slide, can you tell me right now in the state code, is there any language about who decides whether you can have an alcohol license? Meaning number five, my understanding is that we're shifting that application process from city council to staff. Does it talk about that in the state language, or is that just something being proposed for North Salt Lake?
That's just proposed for North Salt Lake, and it's just our portion of the local license. They still have to get the state license. So without us being able, we would review it to give them local consent, then they would go to the state that, yes, they met all of those standards in our ordinance. We're basically telling the state that, and then the state DABS would look at it and say, do you meet all the state requirements, and either issue or deny the license.
I think my concern with that is just that administratively as a staff you really can't wield a personal opinion. It's just, is it in the code or isn't it in the code? Is it approved or is it able to be approved or not? Whereas city council represents more the neighbors, the people who live by these facilities and might have a little more of an opinion on whether they would like that or not. So it kind of takes the personal...
I guess what I would say is that whether staff does it or whether the city council does it, it's an administrative decision, not a legislative decision. So the same rules that apply to staff apply to you. Even if the neighbors don't like it because it's not a zone change, it's not... you would still have to approve it if they met all of the minimum standards. Now, if somebody was asking for a rezone from one commercial zone that didn't allow a bar to a commercial zone that did allow a bar, that's the legislative decision where the council would be able to represent the neighboring landowners or their constituents.
That makes sense. On the next slide, is this tightening or loosening where, or changing at all, the ease or convenience of obtaining these licenses right now?
So the only thing that it's doing is allowing them to be handled at the staff level, but it's not, I wouldn't say that it's either lightening, easing, or making it more restrictive. It's just clearly outlining the process and the standards that will be applied, and then updating those standards so that they conform to state code, because right now our ordinance does not conform to state code.
Okay, thank you for clarifying all of that.
No problem.
Any other questions? Are we ready to make a motion on this?
I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council approve ordinance 2024-05, an ordinance amending Title III, Chapter 2, Alcoholic Beverages.
Also.
Thank you. Any other comments? Let's do a roll call. Ted?
Aye.
Aye.
Abstain.
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item is consideration of additional funding for Hatch Park Phase 1 and assigning city staff to amend the park capital facilities plan and associated impact fee ordinance. Ken?
Thanks, Mayor. This is a reporting back item from our last council meeting. You can advance the slide. Thank you. Where we had a discussion about the shortage that the city has currently for the completion of phase one. As a reminder, maybe for those who are here, the city has been on a track with Hatch Park to construct the plan that you see on the screen, and it was divided into a phase one and a phase two. Phase two was really this kind of looks like the shape of the state of Utah. So if you look at the northeast part of the plan, where you have six buildings that she's outlining, those, that was phase two. And as we had a discussion about that is phase two, as we had a discussion about what to build with what I identified through our design team and our consulting services is a shortage. We have $17 million in cash. The council expressed its desire to press forward with as much of phase one as could be constructed. I think I read that right. And I also took note that we talked about several ways to pay for phase one, and including a discussion about adding some one-time funds, if we could identify them, to the project. That's what I've done tonight, and propose the use of funds in the general fund, where we have a cash balance, if we go to the next slide, and in the capital improvement fund. These are two different governmental funds. These are the cash balances that exist as of today, or maybe it's June 30th. I'll have Heidi correct me if I say it wrong. But these, we believe these are the cash balances available to us. The Capital Improvements Fund, just I put a star and a note on here. This is where the $700,000 that we add to the streets budget comes from every year. We supplement the streets budget. And I just wanted to make a note that this $5,167,407 already has the $700,000 taken out of it. So that truly is what's left that's unrestricted. And in the materials that I sent you, the written materials, I suggested that you could take $1.5 million from each of these funds, and we could add $3 million to the Hatch Park Phase 1 project, which doesn't get it completely built, but it gets us awfully close. And I had a meeting with the consultants and told them that this is the proposal I would be making to the council, that we increase the budget to $20 million. So they're working on that. I'll address impact fees in a minute, but I think from here, if the council is instructs us to go this direction, we would then begin to show you more detailed and thorough plans for what we will be building. And the project, I think, once we decide this budget number, the project can again start to come to fruition. And we really want to do construction over the winter. It'll take a long time to build this park, but we want to get started. We want to go out to the public and show them the park plans, and we've delayed doing that knowing we had this problem. So that's the proposal. It's in some ways, I think we're very fortunate that we have some available cash to do this. That there's also the reality that we have had very flat or flattening impact fee revenues the last 2 years. And so let me address impact fees. I don't have a slide on that, but as I look at remaining buildable plans and projections that we have, we could have up to 2,000 more units of impact fees. Every unit that's constructed pays an impact fee, pays a set of impact fees. My suggestion to the council, as we look at possible future funding for additional pieces of Hatch Park, I mentioned last time the Recreation Arts and Parks reauthorization of that sales tax that happens at the cash register. That will happen in 2027. And I think when that happens, the council should have some comfort that we will have another 10 years of RAP tax, which will grow. Even though sales tax kind of goes up and down, it will continue to be a source of revenue that grows over time. But my suggestion tonight is really that we engage in a process of amending our capital facilities plan for parks. And I think there's a lot of good reasons to do that, whether you're considering an impact fee or not. We have a need to complete the Tunnel Springs Park, which has 10 acres of unimproved property next to it. So when you see Tunnel Springs off to the west, there's 10 acres of city-owned property that needs to be developed. We have additional phases in Hatch Park, which we would put into the plan. We would also try to incorporate some of the trail planning that we've been discussing, even active trails in the urban area that Councilmember Knowlton mentioned in the action items may in fact qualify for the park's impact fee. It may qualify for street impact fees, but it may also qualify as a trail. It may qualify as a way to increase the impact fee. So what I'm suggesting is that we go into that process with the idea that the level of service in parks would increase, which allows us to assess potentially an increase in the park impact fee for the remaining units that may come to the city. So that's something else to consider. But I made that part of the motion tonight because I think that's an important activity. I think it's connected to Hatch Park, but it's perhaps a higher level motion that you might consider making. I would also say if we do increase the park impact fee and we end up having additional park impact fees, we may be able to pay ourselves back for the Hatch Park improvements as well. So there's a lot of funding possibilities here, but my two recommendations tonight are to add $3 million out of the cash reserves the city has to the budget for Hatch Park Phase 1 and to assign to the city staff two tasks, which would be the capital projects plan amendments for parks and the preparation of an impact fee ordinance, and that's all set out in state statute. There's very specific processes and public notices we would have to make in order to get those things done. But that's my recommendation to the council.
Ken, can I throw out a possible third item? A few years ago, we were redoing Deer Hollow Park. We reached out for some funding on a possible ADA park. And we were turned down, I think, because of that it was too affluent of an area. If we isolated the playground area of this park and reapplied, is that a possibility we could get? And it could be an ADA park.
Yeah, we could look at that
funding
for
that, because it's a less affluent area.
Yeah.
If that was really why they,
we could certainly look at that.
And it would be awesome to have an ADA playground.
I have a couple of questions. First of all, just for clarification, I think I'm understanding all of the funds being used here, but I know there was a conversation about potentially using some funds from the Redwood Road RDA. As I see it presented here, no funds will be taken from that. Is that correct?
So in order to fund the $3 million, no funds would be taken from the Redwood Road RDA. We are using some funds from the RDA to make current bond payments,
which we talked about previously.
Which we have previously approved.
Yes. Right. Yes, I remember that.
But this $3 million stands alone as a one-time use of cash reserves.
And then my next question is for you to help me answer this question when I get asked this by residents, which is, why is $17 million not enough? What is the added benefit that we're getting for $3 million extra dollars that makes us want to move the money around so much?
Yeah, that's a great question for all of us to sort of answer together. If you go to the previous slide there, Wendy.
What are we losing if we only have this Phase 1 be a $17 million project?
Yeah, I can't answer that question. We'd have to really look at things that we would not construct. I think you're probably looking at a different plan. For example, you may lose the water feature. You may lose the new pavilion or the plaza, the square. It's not a square, it's a circle in the plan. You would have to make choices about that. So, which you can certainly do. I'm just trying to respond to what I think is the direction of the council, which was to try to fund as much of Phase 1 as we could. And I do think that it may be that $20 million doesn't build you all of Phase 1. So we may be coming back to you with some of those choices, putting off some features for a future funding source, like perhaps impact fees that would need to come in. So I think that we can get, I think we can get most of phase one done for this amount. I'm really hopeful that we can. I wasn't willing, as I looked at the numbers and thought about it and talked to the consultants, as Heidi and I talked, because Heidi literally pulled up the couch cushions and looked for loose change when we tried to put the bond payments together. I don't know where else we would go to fund more Hatch Park construction other than something like an additional borrowing instrument or a tax increase or some of the things that I think we probably would cause us to take a step back and say, maybe we're doing more than we are able to do. And so I really think I've tried to find that point where I think we can do this. I think we can feel comfortable that we're not draining the city's fund balances and reserves down to a dangerous level. It is a one-time use of cash, which you can only do once. But to me, this is a priority that I think for the last 2.5 years, we've consistently said as a city governing body that this is the priority. And I don't know of a higher priority. There's lots of competing priorities, but I think this is if you really want to do a mostly complete phase one, I think this is the best way to do it. So,
can you show us what exactly is phase one? So how much?
I apologize for not having a phasing map. So, do you want to? The line is not exactly, this line right here is approximately the phase one line because that also matches the Land and Water Conservation Fund territory. And it's also the original, it's mostly also the original park. Not exactly that. I can't say that exactly.
So it does not include a potential community center that would
it
be.
It doesn't.
Or any of these other structures on the right.
So this area right here would be phase two or our future phase. We think, I also would say phase one is going to need to include the demolition of buildings on 150 North and on Main Street and a securing of that property. I'm not suggesting that it be planted in grass or in its final condition because we don't, there's a question about the grading that would have to happen. And so we do as minimal as possible, we do work here and here to secure the property and maybe it gets fenced and left. But the real improvements to the park are going to happen in phase one. And so that's, we do as much as we could in phase one with $20 million.
And then just to make sure I understand, funding for phase two is included in the current bond. That payout would come at a later date.
No, there's no funding.
This is exhausting the full bond.
No more funding. The $17 million is in the bond fund, bond proceeds, and that would be spent.
So, Council, we would have to decide to bond for the second part of this as well, having already done a one-time cash payment to shift the budget from 17 to 20 million. And I have some financial concerns of what, why, and whether that's worth it. I'm not saying it's not worth it, but I don't feel like I can describe exactly why it is.
Well, I appreciate, Ken, you taking that feedback and re-looking at everything. I think you accurately heard the feedback. I think, as I was thinking about it over the last 2 weeks, what we're striving for is a community poll. And really the inner workings of this park will be the biggest community pull. I think the structures are nice and they'll be, I think they will be a wonderful addition, but they're not the things that will pull people immediately, where a really beautiful park will pull that city center back to our city center. My understanding is we won't have the baseball structure or field in the phase one, correct?
That's correct.
But we will have pickleball courts, water feature, a beautiful center, and then trails and park structure, which I really do think is what will be most used. A convention center is amazing, and it could be a revenue source down the line, as well as restaurants can be a tax revenue source. But to pull the city back to the center, and my feeling is usually, like you said, this is a one-time shot. It's a one-time use fund, and this is our one-time redoing this park. It's hard to get appetite to go back and redo things that are not done well the first time. Mm. It's better to do them well the first time so that they stand that test of time. Everyone appreciates it, and it's done, so we can move forward should we choose into the other phases. I do think restaurants in a center would be a different type of pull, and it could be very beneficial to, again, creating a city center. But I think the park is the focal priority to me. I'd love to hear, you know, your thoughts.
I appreciate the efforts that are being made to try to make this thing pencil. And we know it's just going to get more and more expensive as time passes. This has been something that, as a city council person, we've been looking at for at least a decade. And I think it's the effort is to make a city center, town center. That's been our goal. And to me, that's a benefit. When I do a cost-benefit analysis, that is a benefit. We have the money. We don't have to go into any further debt except use the money that we have saved cautiously over the years. We can't get phase two, but we will get phase one. I'm very disappointed to hear we can't get the baseball, because I'd love to have that baseball concession stand and all of that, but that's the way it goes. But I do think that if you do the cost-benefit analysis, I see the benefit.
I was going to say, too, I feel like pickleball courts are what everybody has wanted, and if you build those, then I think everybody will be happy, because I don't know, every time I would talk to somebody, that was one of the first things that they wanted in our city. And I feel like every time we review budgets and things like that, we're really careful. You're careful with how you spend our money. So I think it would be used wisely. But I hope it starts soon, because we've talked about it. I feel like if you said it's been a decade, I haven't been around for the whole decade, but I mean, I feel like we've talked about it for a long time, and I hope we get it started soon so we can play on the pickleball courts.
I'm going to say something, and Ken's going to cringe, I know, and my wife will text me tomorrow when she hears about it and go, what were you thinking? We really haven't been able to come up with anything for that 9 acres at Tunnel Springs. We could sell it and pay for some of this, or just sell it and take the money and apply it. Yeah. So I'm sorry, Ken. I just say that.
It's hard to make me cringe. So
okay. And it would be awesome to come up with some great idea for Tunnel Springs, obviously, but we haven't, and we don't have the money.
I don't love the idea of selling city park property.
Nobody does.
We are a mostly built out city, and so preserving those open spaces is important to me. I would rather pull from the general fund at a one-time cost than sell land that we could own forever.
I think Councilmember Van Langeveld was getting at this, and forgive me if you stated it and I just missed it. So, but my question is, if we move forward with this idea of pulling this money on a one-time basis, what's our level of confidence that you're not gonna come back or need to come back in another way, shape, form for more money later? Do we have a sense of that? I know you can't predict the future,
that's a
but I like a sense of it.
That's a great question. And I think the answer is that we draw a firm, hard line in the sand tonight, if you're ready to make a motion tonight, and say, we're going to build an improvement and we're going to spend $20 million and not more. And then I think the design team and the consultants and the staff can come back to you shortly and say, here's what we can build for $20 million. And I think you'll know exactly what that is. And obviously, there's more to be spent in the future. I hope everyone understands that this today, spending sure. $20 million on phase one does not get you everything on this drawing.
Right.
Or even the finished property. You know, it's going to leave some of the property in an unfinished condition. And so everyone should know that.
That's an expected
set of questions. I just wanted to make sure you.
Yeah.
You asked the question, I will be coming back for more for future phases.
Yeah.
And so.
Got it.
But I think we can. I think we can say $20 million is the budget. It includes every penny that we want to spend on phase one, and not more. And I think everyone who's working on this project will commit to that, and that's what will happen. Now, we may have, as happens with most construction, we're going to have things that we didn't know about beforehand, and we'll have changes, and we'll have things like that. But I think if we say $20 million is the budget and not a dollar more, that's where we're going to end up.
And demolition and construction cannot start until we make this decision?
Demolition will be starting.
Regardless.
Yeah, because we do have, we've been expending some funds. And so we will do that.
The other thing is that you're asking the council to direct staff to prepare a budget amendment and also look into the impact fee ordinances and so forth. So the decision that we're making tonight truly isn't the $20 million cap or we're going to make sure we're directing you to prepare the budget amendment. And so if it means that we all think about it for another 2 weeks, we can.
You can.
I feel comfortable making a motion.
Please, go ahead.
Just as soon as Wendy gives it to me.
Sorry.
I move that the City Council direct city staff to prepare a budget amendment to increase the funding for the Hatch Park project for phase one by $3 million and to amend the park capital facilities plan and associated impact fee ordinance as needed.
I'll second it.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Let's
comment quickly. Ahead. I am comfortable with all of this that was discussed. I don't think this needs to be part of the motion, but I would request that in your conversation with the architect, share that sentiment from the council that we do not want to go over. So if they end up designing something that they think will cost $19 million, because things always cost more than they anticipate, that is probably a better idea than hitting our $20 million and then coming back later.
Change orders. Great. There will be change orders.
So maybe the design needs to reflect that kind of hard cap, is what I feel comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's start with Tammy.
Aye.
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 Aye. Thank you.
Let's yes, thank you, Council.
Yeah.
I know we don't do this very often, but thank you.
All right. The next item is the mayor's report. So, always exciting, the mosquito abatement report. We've had 6 cases of West Nile in Utah, and 1 was in Davis County. And the gentleman was hospitalized for a week in very serious condition, but he's recovering. Again, the deaths around the state of Utah are amazing. Colorado, Arizona, California. And so I'm just always amazed at how we're really not, you know, and you think, well, maybe our climate's better, but Idaho has more deaths than we have. And but it's always there. It's always going to be there. And we had, of course, an above average year of water, which made it worse. Gary Hatch, who's the director of the Mosquito Abatement District, has announced that he will retire at the end of 2025, which is disappointing. He is not only does a great job locally, he's a national, he's like the finance person for the National American Mosquito Abatement Association. So quite a, be quite a loss to lose him. As you know, Chief Stone retired from the fire district. Greg Stewart is our new fire chief, and he was promoted internally, and I was pleased with that decision, and I think he'll do a great job. We have the fall cleanup coming, and I'm going to take the blame here because I think I complained about it a few years ago because it was always on conference weekend, but it's too early. We need to have it like a month from now. And so maybe looking forward at some point, we could make that change. I look at my yard and the things I would have to want to cut down, I don't want to cut down yet. And I know sometimes we get snow this time of the year, but I think we should look at having it a month later, something like that. And then I just want to tell the council, I've shared this with Lisa already, but I received some just wonderful feedback on the meeting last time and how professional you all were and how well represented the city was. And so nice job, everyone. And that's all I have. And
thanks, Mayor.
Ken, we'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, I don't really have anything. Everybody made my announcements for me, so that's good. I think the I would just say that I'll echo what Ted said about Allie. She did a fantastic job on the Jordan River event, the canoe event. So I think we've figured out how to actually run that event. About 100 people is the capacity of that event, which we had 110. So yeah, it's a terrific event. I missed, this was the first time I missed in a long time, and so I'm sorry about that, but anyway, it's a great event, and Allie did a wonderful job, so.
Mayor, can I add?
Please.
Before we adjourn, I want to address something. It's not on the agenda, but we had public comment come in today with regard to the school zone and the flashing lights, and I'd like to have that be an agenda item at our next city council meeting. With a thorough analysis, what our authority is, what our responsibility sure. is, and what solutions are necessary. Okay. Then the second one is I would like to give you an opportunity to respond to the second public comment that the city was lacking in collaboration with one of our residents.
I had a report from Mackenzie about, is it Sandy? That's your name? She immediately came to me and said, you know, I've had an argument with a resident who may call you. I don't think I got a call from you.
I emailed you, I tried to call you, never was
I don't have a phone message. I don't have a phone message from you, sorry. it would be uncharacteristic of McKenzie to mistreat the public. I think McKenzie did advise Sandy that the Lifeline property is not in the general plan as a multifamily property, that probably the Planning Commission and City Council would not favorably look on a proposal like that. Anyone is able to submit a development proposal, which I would suggest that if you're committed to that proposal, that he could submit an application. But I think McKenzie was trying to do what she always does, which is advise people what the city's position is likely going to be. And I think maybe we disagree with his characterization that it's multifamily or a homeless shelter. I don't think it's going to be a homeless shelter. So anyway, that's kind of what I know about it. Oh yeah, Sherry may have some.
And I would like to also state that I believe that what was reflected was that we had a request via email from another developer in town that does a lot of things. And he asked specifically about that site and whether or not they should make a run at it. And I said, we can run it by the DRC, the Development Review Committee, on Monday. We talked about it and we felt like that it probably was not the best location because of the proximity to the sewer treatment plant and the noxious smells. And that is what was reported back to them. Of course, we stated that anybody can make an application. We're just trying to tell you what we think will happen on that site. It's zoned commercially, it would take a rezone. And the other things that we outlined at the counter with Sandy, as far as that one goes, was that there may be other soils issues, there's water table issues, and that the height that he was proposing, the number of stories was 6, I believe, and over 200 units, that we didn't think that that was something that the Planning Commission and City Council would be in favor of. However, he is free to, if he gets the property under contract, to make application. We certainly will help him through the process. I kind of take exception to his characterization. I think we had a very friendly conversation with him. He was very nice. We enjoyed visiting with him at the counter and talked about the various uses that could be on there, and maybe other locations along Highway 89 that would be more appropriate for higher density. So that's all that I have to report on that.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
You know, sorry, can I do, on your first point, council member, what's the geography that you're thinking of? Are we talking about one spot, the safety question? Are we talking about around both of the elementary schools, one of them? I think if we provide a little more direction to council, or pardon me, to staff, that might, or like, I just want to see what we're thinking.
My understanding
about
is it's the Center Street location, that it's like 450 East and Center Street, where there is a painted sidewalk, but there isn't a flashing sign. On Center Street is you're heading east. That's where the accident occurred. That primarily is my concern, based on the comments. Yeah. In terms of the analysis of how many safety zones around school, that is just basic research and answers, and you can come back and explain that to us. But for me, what's pressing is the comment that came in with regard to that particular location.
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm. May I add, though, I think it would be worthwhile to include a review of all three of the elementary schools. I don't think that their needs are as pressing, because I think you're right that the orchard is the one that matters, given the current circumstances. But to just say, this is what we have, the general research, and then, is there anything else we need at Adelaide or Foxborough? But really, Orchard is where we feel like there might be some intervention necessary.
I love that idea, and I think we've talked about safety issues around the schools before, and it, like, just a basic refresher of, here's the status, here's that maybe which ones have an agreement that's recent versus an old one with, you know what I mean? That kind of just lay of the land would be really helpful.
Well, I think also that where the accident occurred is one potential that they're looking at, but also Orchard Drive doesn't have a slow zone from Adelaide to the last school zone at Adelaide, closer to, my street is Cider, but it's the one north of that. There's a cross guard. There's not any school zone slowing from that point clear to the light. So I think that's another point that she, Sarah, would want to be to look at. And also past south of the light, because they do come from that way north to the school as well. So just a thought.
Well, I think the idea is to have them, when they if they have sidewalks and we put sidewalks in there, they can stay on that the east side of the street till they get to Center Street. And to me, the obvious answer is kind of like closing the barn door after the horses have gone out, but the sidewalk coming down on the south side of Center Street, well, these kids won't have to cross until they get down to the intersection where the crossing guard is.
Yeah.
So,
and we know that we're going to get more housing across from Orchard, and so we don't always do things prophylactically, but in this case, it would benefit us now, and it's going to be necessary soon, so we might as well look at it right now.
Okay. Thank you all. We are adjourned.